Chapter 11. Everything moves fast as light speed. Fast until it stops, like a ship plowing into the side of an asteroid. It wasn't the Chancellor, Leia tells them, taking a cup of tea from her protocol droid. Thank you, Elsie. Sinjir cocks an eye at her. He's angry. Irrationally so, perhaps. He likes to keep things cool. He imagines his heart is less an organ beating blood into his body, and more a collection of icicles hanging from the chin of some malevolent snow beast. But he can keep that veneer no longer. He knows full well that running off like a soggy, drunk adventurer into the crushing maw of the Empire's fleet was not a wise decision. And a little part of him is thankful they're not right now being blasted to bits by a super star destroyer in the space above Jakku. But the rest of him seethes over the fact that Nora and Jazz are still down there somewhere, hopefully alive, and nobody coming for them the way they have come for others. Lucky, perhaps, that Temin isn't here. Sinjir sent the boy to see the pilot, Wedge Antilles. Wedge might know how to get them to Jakku. Then it was you, Sinjir accuses. You blocked us. Leia gives him an incredulous look. Do you truly believe me so duplicitous, Sinjir? Yes. He frowns and shakes his head. No, I don't know. Someone sent those guards. They didn't send themselves. Han passes behind Sinjir with a cup of caff in his hand.
Mine can be a slippery one, he says. But this isn't like her. Here, drink this.
He thrusts the cup into Sinjir's hand.
You're gonna need it.
I'm going to need something considerably stronger.
That comes later, if we win. Or if it goes the other way.
Sinjir runs long fingers through his dark mass of hair with one hand, while sipping the bitter caff with the other. It's got a hard afterburner kick to it, like drinking a mug of vaporator sludge.
We need to get to Jakku.
That just became a whole lot harder, Leia says. Explain to me again what exactly happened. Mon's opponent in the upcoming election, he knew. Wartol knew about the Empire. And worse, he knew that we knew. Our window to get you to Jakku was very small already, and him making that public just closed it.
Why?
Because, Han interjects, this just became officially political. You go zipping off to that dirt world, it'll look like an act of war on behalf of the New Republic before the Senate had time to do squat about it.
You mean like, oh, say, Kashyyyk?
It's a barb, Sinjir knows, but he means for it to sting. He grows weary of double standards, as weary as he grows of politics, and of nearly everything at this point.
Don't look at me. I say you still go.
Han,
Leia cautions.
I know. But it's what I'd do, and what you do too.
Sinjir groans and takes a long, stiff sniff of the calf underneath his nose.
None of this explains who sent those guards to meet us at the platform, does it? And who told the Orishan senator about all this?
It wasn't you, was it?
Leia asks. She's serious. He retorts the same way she did.
Do you truly believe me so duplicitous, princess?
Before she can answer, he cuts in.
Never mind, don't answer that. No, of course not. It was not me, nor was it Temin.
He declines to remind everyone here that once upon a time, Temin did betray them at the Akivan Palace. And he is young and a bit of a firebrand.
But no, that's impossible. We had an answer. We had a way to Jakku. There was no need to complicate the solution we already had for our problem.
Then it hits him. It wasn't just that Senator Wartol knew something he shouldn't. It was that someone knew everything that went on here.
Which means...
Oh, drat, Sinjir says with a vicious scowl.
The walls have ears.
Huh?
Han asks.
But Leia understands. Her eyes go as big as battle stations, and she thrusts a finger to her lips before offering a gentle nod to Sinjir.
I'll be back,
Sinjir says.
Time to pay our mutual slicer friend a visit. His heart races as he exits the apartment, one name waiting on the back of his tongue. Unwilling to be spoken, but present just the same. Condor.
Chancellor Mon Mothma is bone-weary already, and the day is young. With her one good hand, she smooths the fabric of her white gown.
Are we good?
She asks the woman nearby. That woman, Tracine Kane from Holonet News, stands at the fore of the platform. She looks to a chubby Sullustan nearby, who clucks and Sullustees as he crouches down, connecting cables from the hovering cam to the holoprojector platform. Mon has elected not to speak in front of a crowd. Stars forbid that someone out there boo her or harangue her from the audience, only furthering the assured descent in her approval numbers. Better here, where she can control the environment. And HNN likes the exclusive, especially in an age when they will no longer be the only player. Other networks have begun springing up to compete, which is the earmark of a healthy democracy, Mon believes. Many voices competing, not one voice dominating. Though, she wonders, if Wartol wins the chancellorship, then what? Will it be his voice that dominates? Or is she demonizing her opponent too much? Surely he wants the best for the galaxy, even as they disagree on how best to accomplish that uneasy feat.
Thank you for coming on such short notice, Mon says.
My pleasure,
Tracine answers.
I was out of the field for a while, covering the war.
Why did you return to cover politics?
The journalist hesitates.
I couldn't look at war any longer.
You and me both.
Mon sighs.
It feels like we've always been at war. I aim to stop that. But to do so, well, not to put too fine a point on it, but that means the only way out is through.
We must end the Empire to bring peace. And to end the Empire, first we must endure politics.
Suddenly she smirks.
Be cautious, Miss Kane. War may seem like a pleasant dream when you look too long into the abysmal eye of the political machine.
Noted,
Kane says, returning her own small smile.
Bert, are we ready?
The Sullustan cam operator grunts as he stands, then gives a thumbs up. His face flaps lift to show a gummy grin. With that, Mon Mothma steps into the circle. Moments pass. She steadies herself and tries very hard to stop her left hand from shaking. The platform glows blue around the edges. Tracine gives her a gentle nod. Words spring up in front of her. The words of her speech in a slow-moving crawl. It is a speech too hastily written, she knows. Usually, she would take as much time as she could on any speech that goes out this far and this wide. But time is a luxury now, and she has to get ahead of this thing before it becomes a scandal hung around her neck like a heavy weight.
Yesterday, I became aware of the possibility that the Galactic Empire had retreated to a planet in the Inner Rim, near the unknown regions. Planet of relative insignificance known as Jakku.
Already she curses herself. Should she be saying that about any system in the galaxy? Insignificant? A bloom of embarrassment rises to her cheeks, and it only confirms that she is off her game, and has been off her game since coming out of critical care here on Chandrilla. She pushes past her doubts, because what choice does she have?
Keep talking, Mon. Our military has already begun efforts to confirm this information. We have launched a ship, the Oculus, under the command of Ensign Arden Deltura, an expert who similarly helped us during the threat on Akiva. We believe his efforts will confirm what our initial scouting showed, that much of the Imperial fleet is now in space above the planet Jakku. It remains to be seen, however, if this also includes a ground occupation of the planet, or is something else that is not wholly understood.
Uncertainty plagues her.
She hates using the military as a lever. And yet at the same time, she now fears that she was too hasty in relieving herself of certain powers. Certainly, this would be much easier if the allocation of military resources did not rely on politics. Ah, but isn't that exactly how Palpatine felt? The Senate stood in the way of progress. So he manipulated the Senate, overwhelmed it, and inevitably abolished it. No. She is doing the right thing. Politics is meant to be turbulent. It is meant to be slow and steady. Elastic, too, so that the system bends but does not break.
I would not normally divulge such information publicly, but my hand has been forced. Further, it is safe to assume the Empire is aware of our probes testing the margins of their occupation, which means we must act quickly to seize what advantage we have. As such, I am calling the Senate to an emergency session tonight, where I will resolve that we must mobilize our armed services to war against the Galactic Empire in the skies above Jakku, and perhaps even upon its surface. It is with a heavy heart that I call us to war once more. But I am vigilant that the threat of the Empire must not stand in the way of our safety and our sanity. I know that the Senate will stand with me. And when they do, I am confident that this will be the end of the Empire.
The Chancellor gives a curt nod and steps out of the circle. Trecine gives Bert, the cam operator, the signal. He cuts the feed. The circle goes dark.
You did fine,
Trecine says.
You must have sensed my apprehension.
No.
She's lying, Mon thinks. But so it goes. It is rare that she receives the straight truth from anybody anymore.
It's just, it must be hard being you. Under siege from every direction.
Yes,
Mon says.
It is hard, but we persevere. Like the Rebel Alliance before us. Like the New Republic now. We persevere.
The man with bronze skin and a scruffy, sand-colored beard seems taken aback by the guest at his door.
Oh,
is all he says.
Hello, Condor,
Sinjir says as greeting. He chills his voice, putting some ice into it, just to ensure that it is clear he is not here on a mission of mercy. Also to make it clear that he has no feelings here at all, lest anyone believe him somehow sentimental.
Sinjir.
May I come in?
And if I said no?
Then I would pout so powerfully my moppishness would take corporeal form and kick the door down.
Condor's warm eyes light up as his face softens.
Same old Sinjir. Sure. Come on in.
Inside the man's apartment is the epitome of austerity. Sinjir's fingerprints are long gone. He, too, prefers Spartan living, but still likes a little splash of color now and again. The bloody blush of a Hayaka flower bouquet, or the rich cerulean of a saltwater octofish tank. Condor has gone back to decor that is black, white, and gray. The only flash the domicile offers is a punctuation of brushed chrome cabinet handles or silverstone tile.
He would have done well as an interior decorator in the halls of the Empire.
I don't feel like the same old,
Sinjir says.
Maybe just old.
You are not old. Neither of us is.
Fine. Older, then. And definitely not the same.
You seem the same to me.
Well, I feel different, Sinjir snaps. Oh my, this isn't going as expected.
Not that he should have expected anything else, he supposes.
I need you. Your help, I mean.
By all the bloody stupid stars, untangle your tongue, Rathvelis.
It's not even me that needs your help, so don't get any damn ideas. It's the princess. She needs you.
She could have called me herself.
Yes, but this is sensitive.
Condor leans up against the counter.
You want to sit? Have a drink?
I would like that very much.
No, Sinjir answers sharply. Too sharply, despite the contrary thought doing loops in his heart. No, I would not like a drink.
Then maybe you really are a different Sinjir. Not one here to kill me, I hope. Chip stuck in the back of your head.
Condor was one of the ones who helped decipher that little riddle for the New Republic. It's why Sinjir is here now, to see him.
I believe we have a bug in Leia's domicile.
Condor hmms and scuffs a heel against the ground.
This about what's going on? The Empire at Jakku?
Suddenly he stands up straight.
Oh, Sin. Tell me you're not somehow involved in all that.
Two of my people are there. Nora and Jazz. On the ground. Under the Empire's boot.
This may be related to all that. I don't know yet.
They're my people, too.
Condor reaches out to touch Sinjir's arm, but Sinjir pulls away.
Will you help?
He asks Condor.
On one condition.
There are no conditions. You'll not hold me hostage with emotional blackmail. Either you will help or you won't.
Condor sighs.
I just want to know why you left me.
Because we were done.
You could have fooled me.
Obviously. I did fool you.
The Slicer chews on that.
Yes. Indeed you did at that.
He's angry now.
Good. Be mad, you fool. Don't be so daft as to fall for a villain such as me.
I'll help you. I assume you mean now.
I mean yesterday, but it's too late for that. So now we'll have to do.
You're mad,
Wedge says.
Means you're doing busy work, Temin snaps.
Captain Antilles looks down at the data pad in his hand. It's true. He is doing busy work. But what else is he supposed to do at this point? Behind the two of them, the hangar bustles with activity. Though they have not yet gotten the call to battle, they were told to be ready when it came. That means fueling up. That means loading munitions. Cross-checks abound. Some of these starfighters, X-Wings, Y-Wings, A-Wings, and even that prototype T-70 in the back, will end up on various capital ships before the New Republic fleet flings itself through hyperspace into the theater of war, where the Empire's own malevolent forces gather.
Of course, Wedge thinks, I won't be going along.
None of Phantom Squadron will. The pilots in his nascent squadron are washouts and weirdos to the last. His favorite kind of crew. Reminds him of the days not that long ago. In the Rebel Alliance, when you took whatever bush pilot and womp rat hunters you could find, and you stuck them in battle-scarred fighters. You went to war with the pilots you had. Now things are more formalized. More training, more boxes to check, more politics. And he fizzled on that last part. Going out to Kashyyyk with Leia and Akbar was the first outing of Phantom Squadron. And the last. But what was the choice? Abandon Han and Leia? Let Kashyyyk fall to the bombs dropped by those Star Destroyers? Sometimes doing the right thing didn't mean following orders. Following orders would have meant never betraying the Empire in the first place. Never joining the Rebel Alliance. But that's tricky, isn't it? That transition from a ragtag bunch of dissidents and mutineers to a proper government is a hard one. Many of them still have rebel hearts beating in their chests. It's in them to question orders, to fight back when something doesn't seem right, even if it's coming from someone you trust. People trusted Palpatine once. Doesn't matter now. In public, Wedge got a medal. In private, he got reamed out, and Phantom Squadron was shut down. His crewmates have gone on. None of them are pilots now. They're all support crew. Coco runs fueling lines. Jeth Poor is an engine mechanic. Last he heard, Yara gave it all up, and she's out somewhere on a fishing rig. One of the organic-led ones that cleave to the old Chandrillan ways of hauling fish up one at a time on lines of braided Dian thread. And here he is, doing busy work, managing a hangar.
It's necessary work, Snap, he tells the young man. Don't call me that.
Oh, sorry. I thought you liked the nickname.
I did, but now I don't.
Temin steps in front of him, arms crossed.
You like her.
What?
My mother. You like her.
I... Wedge feels nervous, suddenly thinking about her. His mouth dry as a new shirt, but the back of his neck goes suddenly slick with sweat.
Nora. Snap. Sorry. Timon. I was close with your mother. We were friends.
You were more than friends.
With every word, Timon thrusts an accusing finger. Then he throws up his hands, exasperated.
And fine, I don't care about that. But you care about her. So she's out there, Wedge. She needs our help. She's trapped on a planet, and we can go right now to save her. You have clearances. I know you do.
Wedge barks an uneasy laugh.
I don't have those clearances anymore. Not after Kashyyyk. And your mother...
He sighs and sets the data pad down.
I do care about her. A lot. And part of why I care about her is that I know she's tough as a handful of hexabolts. That planet won't break her. The Empire won't break her. And we'll get her out.
So you're just abandoning her?
I'm not, I swear. But I'm just one guy, without a whole lot to say about any of it. What I can do is what I have to do. This isn't just busy work. It's making sure our ships and our pilots are ready to fly, because they need to hit that fleet like a fist. That's how we get your mother back. We don't just send you or me or the Falcon. We send the whole New Republic.
Temin sneers.
Glad to hear you've made yourself feel better about not doing a damn thing. I'll see you, Wedge. Snap. Damn it. Temin, wait!
But the boy is already hard charging away in long, angry strides. Sinjir catches Condor through the window. The Slicer asks them all to stay outside while he does his scan of Leia's domicile. From the center of Condor's palm rises a small, hand-machined probe droid, like a little wobbly ball with a nest of needled antennas coming off it at all angles. It hums and thrums and bobbles around the room, a green beam of light sweeping across every corner, every counter, every bit of bric-a-brac. It's not the probe droid that Sinjir is watching, though. It's Condor. Condor is comfortable in his skin, and even more comfortable in his role. There's just something enticing about seeing someone so capable, so confident. The hinge of Sinjir's jaw tightens, like a trap eager to spring.
Look away, you daft clod.
He's suddenly self-conscious about it. Sinjir isn't exactly alone out here, is he? Leia, Han, and their insufferable protocol droid are with him.
Mom!
T2LC is saying as he hands over a digestive biscuit to the princess.
A small bite of bland food to calm your nerves.
I don't need that, LC, but thank you.
Leia waves it away, then to Han.
I can't believe I was so foolish. A listening device? In our home?
Relax. Solo shrugs it off. We don't even know if that's what happened yet. Maybe this is some kind of fluke.
No,
Sinjir says.
This is no fluke. Someone is listening in. It's the only explanation.
Except for Temin having betrayed us all.
I confirmed with Mon,
Leia says.
Those guards that turned you away from the Falcon, she didn't send them.
Han nods.
That means Wartol did it.
Does he have that kind of power?
Sinjir asks.
He's just a senator.
A senator running for the chancellorship.
And, Leia adds with a sigh,
currently pulling ahead with a rather robust lead.
Solo throws up his hands.
Politics is mean business. I'd rather fall into a nest of starving Gundarks than get caught up in those gears. Wartol has power in places we can't see. He's close with the Senate Guard, too.
As a candidate, he has access to them. They protect him.
This Orishin. Sinjir would very much like to pay him a visit. He would then like a heavy stick to pay a visit to the man's knees.
Be assured, Sinjir says. Condor will find something.
Minutes later, the slicer emerges.
I didn't find anything.
Well, thanks for that,
Sinjir thinks.
How? How is that possible?
How? There's nothing to find. No listening devices, no cams. Unless Wartol has someone building devices who's more sophisticated than I am.
The slicer smirks.
And no one is more sophisticated than I am.
That damn smirk. That big-eyed confidence. Those cherub cheeks puffing out underneath his scratchy beard. You adorable, incorrigible demon.
Still, can't let Condor have his day.
You failed us. Someone out there is more sophisticated, it seems, because...
Because it's easier to insult your abilities than admit I'm wrong.
Because I'm right. Plain and simple.
I'm sorry, Sin, but I mean it. I didn't find a damn...
The small probe droid held fast in Condor's hand begins to beep in fast staccato. It shudders in his grip. The slicer utters a grunt of surprise as the droid suddenly leaps out of his hand and takes flight. It doesn't go far, though. It whirls around in a circle and stops in front of the protocol droid's gleaming face.
Oh, my!
T2LC says, alarmed. The probe scans the protocol droid's face, and then it lights up like a detonator about to pop.
Flashing lights, klaxons, a vibrating buzz.
Condor swipes it out of the air and powers it down, clipping it to his belt as it falls silent.
All eyes turn toward the protocol droid.
It's not me, Mum!
The droid objects. Han Solo scowls and reaches for the protocol droid.
Elsie, you ought to hold still. This is gonna sting a little.
Mon Mothma comes into her office, tired, feeling gutted. She has just given her speech to the Senate, her last plea. An easy one that asked for their vote to send the brunt of the New Republic's military to Jakku in order to end the Empire's oppression once and for all. She was uncharacteristically jingoistic, but they need this vote. The Chancellor told the hundreds of senators present in the last Chandrillan session that this will be the defining battle of the war. It is likely to be the final battle of the war. She presented to them all the facts as they had them. Data from probe droids and the Oculus that demonstrated plainly that the bulk of Imperial forces are present and accounted for. The numbers, she reminded them, are on their side. They are no ragtag junkyard fleet going up against a monolithic battle station. Not this time. Their own military forces have more than tripled since the destruction of the second Death Star at the Sanctuary Moon. Meanwhile, the Empire's own fleet has been whittled away. A tree to a branch to a bundle of splinters. And then dust that becomes nothing as the wind takes it away. Or so she hopes.
We can win this, she told the Senate.
She meant it. Then her time on stage was over. Applause came up behind her like a rising wave, urging her forward out of the Senate House and pushing her all the way back to her office. Now she feels stripped down, hollowed out, weary, bleary, and done.
I can't be done yet. Soon, but not yet.
Yes, the day has nearly eaten her alive, but it did not. She has persevered. And soon, Mon Mothma shall be triumphant. At every turn, some new snarl presented itself, and she or Oxy or Akbar had to spend additional time unraveling each knot. Never mind the overwhelming number of administrative duties that threatened to draw her down like a slurry of sucking silt sand.
everything is prepared. The moment the Senate gives their easy approval, the mechanism of war will wind up quickly, triggering events as needed. It calls to mind a match of rivers and roads, the old Chandrillon game of toppling over tiles. One falls into another, and into the next thereafter, and they speed along. If you place them correctly, they all fall down, and they fall more swiftly than those of your opponent. If you fail, they fall too slowly, or never fall at all. Once the vote is in, the ships launch. The ground forces mobilize. Everything begins. And hopefully, her tiles fall faster than the Empire's, and this is truly the end of that oppressive regime's rivers and roads. She collapses into her chair. Oxy sweeps over, a bulbous, long-necked bottle of very good brandy held in the same hand, with which she precariously grasps two glasses by their rims.
I think this calls for a nip. What's the old saying? You can never count the stars, for some may already be dark. The vote isn't in yet, Oxy. But it will be momentarily.
She sets the glasses down and begins to pour. Rich amber liquid sloshes around the bell of each.
And we'll win. But what does it matter? After the day we've had, I think we deserve a bit of the good stuff. Oh, and your numbers are already improving nicely. They were up before you even stepped on stage.
Mon sighs and takes the glass in her good hand.
People do like war. No, shh, stop that. People like to know that they are safe. And in this case, if that safety is earned by grinding the last Imperial stormtrooper into the dirt, then count me among them.
Their brandy glasses tink as they tap together. Mon takes a sip. The liquor is warm in her mouth, and as she swallows, it spreads its heat to her throat and her belly. As it goes down, it's like a zipper opening her up. All this tightly packed material inside her heart suddenly unspooling. She feels like she is almost ready to breathe a sigh of relief and sleep a very long sleep.
Don't get too comfortable, she cautions herself. You won't be able to rest long on your laurels. Akbar will lead this battle, but it is you who oversees the war, Chancellor.
As if on cue, her office door chimes. Akbar enters. She is poised to ask him if it is time. Time to launch. Time to complete the dread task they set out to complete many years before with the first stirred embers of the Rebel Alliance.
But she sees now the stark look on his face.
Mon Cala are hard to read for most humans,
but she knows Akbar well, and she spies the reluctance in his stiff-backed posture, in his curling chin tendrils, in his half-lidded eyes.
Tell me, she says.
The vote did not pass. We are grounded, Chancellor. The fleet will not go to Jakku, and there the Empire shall remain.